Charm of Favor, Chapter 21.
In 2013, under the direction of the Environmental Protection Agency, abatement companies quickly took advantage of grant money made available by the Obama administration to tool up to service these areas. It wasn't as though the highway and transit contractors actually wanted to buy the abatement services. They would have been financially attacked through EPA enforcement actions had they not complied. Just as with all other costs associated with government contracts, they are all passed on to the taxpayer. It has been that way since the first stimulus awards were granted in the summer of 2009. He called it investing in America. The truth is that more than 91% of the money borrowed from China and Saudi Arabia was given to donors and bundlers for the DNC. It became the business modus for the Obama administration. Any company seeking federal grants, loan guarantees, or subsidies had to first make its deal with regional Democrat campaign finance bundlers to make a pledge. Companies with higher pledges were the ones who got the grants, with the understanding that obligations paid in full before the award date would be prioritized for grant approval. Within 8 years, the syndicate's plan was to double the American national debt from 39% of the gross domestic product to more than 79%. Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama implemented that plan perfectly. The Department of Highway and Transit has hundreds of Democrats on the committee who are constantly seeking campaign financing. It was not uncommon in larger voting districts for a single grant recipient to cover substantial campaign contributions for as many as a half dozen Democrat congressmen and possibly a senator. That goes without saying that substantial funds were encouraged for the president as well. A $20 million grant may bear a $10 million campaign contribution burden, but the contractor simply assigned this to the cost of doing business. Often, the recipient company was required to provide common free trading stock to the congressman through a campaign manager or a charity. Once the grant or the government contract enriched the company, causing the stock to increase in value, the congressman would cause the sale of his stock, regardless of the effect that sale would have on the share price and pocket the profits. Small companies had no choice but to play the Democrat game if they had any hope of being profitable, as the U.S. government has always been the world's biggest consumer. There were thousands of small companies funded this way every year, and thousands more who were denied, simply because they refused to compromise their own ethics by paying to play. Adnan paid close attention to the classified section of the local newspaper in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. He dutifully managed the charge on the lithium batteries that stored the power for the piezoelectric tritium injectors and the smooth nanotechnology ceramic implosion charge inside the polished aluminum sphere of the device. The tiny ball of plutonium inside the sphere was an alpha emitter, and as such, was nearly impossible to detect from across the small shop. No one would ever suspect a non-working industrial dryer mounted on a compressor truck for a highway abatement contractor. It took months to get the device built to the exacting standards the North Koreans had specified in their process guides. The Clintons used their authority to smuggle Chinese scientific spies into Sandia Labs in 1995, in what the New York Times reported as merely an effort to improve U.S. relations with China. Within months, the Chinese were provided access to classified information on 7 U.S. thermonuclear warheads, including every currently deployed thermonuclear warhead in the U.S. ballistic missile arsenal. That included the W-88, a miniaturized warhead that is the most sophisticated weapon the United States has ever built. In addition, they were provided a full set of working specifications for an enhanced neutron bomb that had never been deployed by any country, including the United States. The Chinese provided tens of millions of dollars to the Clintons Foundation in exchange for the access. Some of it was delivered in untraceable cash. It didn't matter that they got caught. The Clinton crime syndicate was so powerful by then, no force on earth could stop them. It took North Korea no longer than 20 years to advance that technology far beyond any other force on the planet. The Russians gained some of it, the Chinese gained some of it, but it was the sequestered genius of North Korea that made it small and precise and unstoppable. His construction of the miniature tritium device would have been done sooner, but access to the Stennis Space Center provided a critical source for the hydrogen. Other gases would have been used, but what the device lacked in size, it made up for in yield. The hydrogen proton is the heaviest proton in the universe. Using natural gas or ammonium would have chemically provided protons, but their atomic mass was far less than that of hydrogen. Bonding these heavy protons with oxygen to make a peroxide is what made rocket fuel that would burn all the way into low orbit. No one would detect a few hundred pounds of missing hydrogen from the chemical plants at Stennis. Hell, they had more than that leak into the atmosphere like chemical fugitives escaping valves, switches, and flanges every week. The other issue was the amount of time it took to program the rocket test facilities at Stennis. The talent to look at a set of prints and write software that animated that drawing into a perfectly operating machine was extremely rare. The need for immigrants to do this programming was a priority, as American programmers wanted to write apps and live in Silicon Valley, not in the mosquito swamps of Mississippi, of the third-world educational environment of Louisiana's public school system. Adnan was polite, clean-shaven, and rarely had any of his code edited by quality control. When the classified ad for lemon cheesecake finally appeared, it was nearly May. He drank the rest of his latte at Starbucks, folded the newspaper under his arm, and drove to the old welding shop in the woods of the Stennis Space Center complex. Operation Dewclaw was about to move to the next phase. He reflected again on the lifelong process that had brought him to this point. The colonial battles destroyed Damascus and the death of his brother and parents. He spent years blown about with his desire for revenge until the syndicate contacted him and trained him to program software. His class had more than 200 boys in it, but after 3 years, there was only him. Many of them could not master the skill, so they volunteered for suicide missions. Each time one of them would carry out an assignment, the boy's family would become instantly wealthy after receiving a payment from the syndicate. The parents would make a shrine for their martyred son. One by one, they all disappeared or were moved to Europe to hide in Sharia zones, protected from local law enforcement, to wait for orders, just like he received. It was a very special cog in a global machine built with trillions of dollars to bring all of humanity under one rule by one true God. He laughed to himself as he pulled off of Interstate 59 onto the road leading to the Space Center because of the subtle differences between the rule of law and the rule by law. When the lights go out, the world will see only darkness from space. As this land of Satan is sent back to the Stone Age, he said quietly in the cab of his pickup truck. His construction of this device was flawless. The September 2017 test of a similar device in North Korea yielded more than 200 kilotons, 5 times the power of the blast at Trinity. This design was a fraction of the weight, and it utilized an advanced tritium enrichment system that no one had ever seen outside of their mountain test facility. The fact that it could level everything above ground for 2 miles in every direction was a small benefit when compared to the pulse that would travel at nearly the speed of light, almost 600 miles in every direction, overloading every integrated circuit in its path. He was humbled by the thought that he would live to see his genius come to fruition. His creation was about to join a very short list of devices that changed the world, right alongside the Gutenberg press and the iPhone. The realization that he was blessed and protected by God to deliver his judgment on the wicked nations of the world caused his eyes to well up with humility. Like Joshua of old, his trump would bring down the walls of the modern Jericho. He softly sung the song again as a single tear fell down his cheek. You may talk about your men of Gideon. You may brag about your men of Saul. There's more like good old Joshua at the Battle of Jericho. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down. In a few days, his device would be charged with tritium, crated, and weighed, and loaded onto the trailer he would pull to Nashville, Tennessee. All these years he spent planning, learning, and avoiding mistakes. He tried not to think about his reward. That was the dream-building motivation of the infidel. The visions of cars and money and first-class living produced extraordinary results in the capitalist system. These things were their god. There would be no such desire in him. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward, he said to the windshield. My reward waits for me in heaven. Allahu Akbar. He pulled his truck onto the gravel road leading back to the woods. He noticed the leaves coming in brightly and the evening sun cutting through the humid, still air of the hardwood forest. He rolled down the windows and listened to the tires crunch along the gravel, and smelled the flowers competing for bees with their fragrance. He slowed to watch a doe and her two young fawns cross the single-lane path through the woods. The old Ford rocked back and forth as the shocks mildly complained at the effort to make it smoother. He wondered if America would look like this in a few years, nothing but trees and birds and the quiet of nature without humans stacked to the sky like voting corrals. It wouldn't be long now. America first, he said to the doe, first to die. He pulled around behind the welding shop this time. Each time he drove here, he used a slightly different track with his tires. Anyone making the mile-long drive down this dirt road would pass by this rusty building with no exterior lights and no windows. They might look at the grass and notice that there is no path worn to the doors. Maybe it was abandoned. Maybe there was nothing to see here. The tall forest had long since covered the sky from view, and he knew there would be no satellite images of this building because of that. The solar panels he had placed on the roof charged old forklift batteries which powered the lights, the small refrigerator, the hydrogen compressor, and the computers inside the building. The meter base had long since rusted off the wall, and its wires hung conspicuously disconnected out of the weatherhead. He unlocked the man door, rolled up the door, and backed inside to conceal his truck. He backed under the hitch of the trailer and stopped. Within a couple of minutes, he had the electric brakes, lights, and the hitch secured. He didn't mind living like this at all. There was no green thing left in Damascus. There was not a whole pane of glass intact in his city that once was the most powerful in the world. There was no need to fight in the Middle East anymore. The mechanism for funneling money to global armies was put in place under President Bush and refined under President Clinton. But under Barack Obama, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, ISIL, and the Taliban received billions in taxpayer funds with only one string attached. All they had to do was everything Hillary asked of them. And the money was theirs to keep. It was an interesting shell game, but it worked so well, no one argued with it. There was a small group of globalists whose combined wealth was greater than most countries. Donald Trump was not supposed to be permitted to win the election. He had every globalist establishment against him. No one group made up his supporters. They couldn't be attacked individually because they were Christians, blacks, Hispanics, and even sleepy white people who never get excited about anything except weekends. So Hillary just called them all deplorables, a title they gleefully adopted and bore with pride. The fact he could pack a stadium or an airplane hangar with cheering white trash wasn't supposed to matter. Hillary had the banks, intelligence agencies, arms companies, and foreign money all united behind her coronation. Even the media owners and the journalists themselves were blind supporters of the globalist agenda and voted in lockstep for Hillary. Adnan was relocated from Pakistan to Mexico when it looked like the American election wasn't going to go as planned. Dozens of nations had purchased favors from the Clintons and had received billions in federal aid and weapons when she was Secretary of State, most of which was happily laundered back to the Clintons in an incestuous cabal that openly planned to turn American state borders into nothing more than county lines. Under the syndicate's plan, governors would become regional managers. State legislations would become obfuscated under its judicial interpretation of the Supremacy Clause. But things didn't go as planned. Even Adnan's bullion mind could see that Donald Trump's willingness to hit back against the media moguls who took cheap shots at him with stories fabricated out of thin air was popular with what he termed the forgotten man. He included each person, it seemed, individually. He visited them and spoke to them and not over them in their towns. He tweeted directly to them like they were his friends all day and night. Every word he typed assured them he cared about them. No president had ever done that before. Hillary displayed open hatred for anyone who would support Trump. She refused to even visit states that she took for granted. She avoided the press for months at a time, refusing campaign contributions and matching funds from his own party. Trump ran patriotic ads that promised prosperity and opportunity so everyone could succeed, while Hillary's ads were negative, hateful, and focused on a global interdependency between nations. For Hillary, government was the god everyone should worship. For Trump, God was God. When the syndicate realized Hillary had lost the election, and they were not going to get the access to the American treasury they were promised, it became necessary to implement Operation Dewclaw. He moved to Hattiesburg and was easily able to secure a good employment at the Stennis Space Center, working for a large contract engineering firm. The plan to capture the souls of men did have to be redirected back on course from time to time. Occasionally, these course corrections required cataclysmic force. America had disrupted their plans long enough. The Dark Army was born of the sword, and proved even now that they cannot be defeated by ships or planes. And when America's ships sink to the bottom of the sea and their planes fall out of the sky and their machines and computers do not work anymore, it will be the sword of Damascus that takes its head. America only has 1.2 million active military service members globally. Even with reserves, they have less than 2 million. There are more than five times that many soldiers already inside America, carefully installed by the Clinton State Department into every major city from coast to coast. These young soldiers have been fed, housed, and trained so that when the moment is right, they can reclaim what America took from them over the past two centuries. Adnan took a deep, cleansing breath as he checked the gauges on the hydrogen tanks. He rolled the overhead hoist frame over the device resting on the wooden pallet on the old concrete floor. He pulled the chain hand over hand to lower the hook to the lifting ring on the top of the device. He put on his work gloves and began to lift the device off the floor. When he got it high enough, he backed the trailer underneath it and lowered the assembly to the deck. Within an hour, he secured it with straps and loaded the fully charged batteries disguised as a control cabinet. He connected the cables and double-checked the indicator lights to make sure the circuits were wired correctly. The tritium cartridges were compressed and stored in liquid nitrogen to slide into the 12 tubes above the piezoelectric injectors. Once the cap was bolted and torqued to specification, taking care not to warp the 2-inch thick flange, it would be ready for transportation. His exposure might be lethal, but it didn't matter. Alpha decay would take at least 2 weeks. After that, the bleeding could still be controlled for a few more weeks if he wanted to. He opened the lid to the liquid nitrogen freezer. In his heart, he could already feel the universe shifting on its axis.